Given that by the time the Channel's period of coverage finishes, France built precisely one carrier, and that one is infamous, it might come as something of a surprise that the French had actually been quite active in carrier design during the interwar period, looking at everything from 27,000-ton fleet carriers down to 13,000-ton mini carriers, and pretty much everything in between. Cruiser carriers, carriers with open bows, ones with closed bows, flush deck carriers, carriers with islands, carriers with single hangars, carriers with multiple hangars, armoured carriers, unarmoured carriers, and even converting some of their early heavy cruisers into carriers. But a combination of funding shortages and a tremendous amount of debate over what a carrier should actually offer the Marine Nationale meant that none of the 15 design programmes that this covered actually advanced. Instead, poor old Bern plodded along providing some practical carrier experience, including quite a long list of things to be avoided in the future. But by the mid-1930s, there were two new factors driving the need for carriers. Firstly, the Marine Nationale's new capital ships were fast, and poor old Bern, which was barely swift enough to keep pace with World War I-era dreadnoughts, would be hopelessly left behind. And secondly, reports were coming in of Germany ordering aircraft carriers of their very own, and so clearly a counter was needed. But, as the first ideas began to percolate, there was also a much larger strategic decision being made. The Abyssinian crisis of 1935 had caused the Royal Navy to refocus from a Pacific war to a European one, and with this came the much higher possibility of carrier operations taking place constantly in range of enemy land-based air forces. In order to survive, the Royal Navy switched from the Ark Royal, a large fleet carrier that focused on air group size, to the Illustrious class, heavily protected vessels that could survive the inevitable bombardment. The French had seen this issue unfolding as well, but they came to a very different conclusion. Unlike Britain, France was a continental nation and had airfields on the continent, shockingly enough. Therefore, the French Air Force would have to deal with any air situation in the enclosed waters of the Mediterranean and potentially the North Sea, and the Marine Nationale's new carriers would deal with enemy land-based aircraft simply by operating too far away for them to reach them, 400 nautical miles beyond any mainland enemy coastline. Having also recently regained control of naval aircraft development from the Air Force, design PA-16 began to take shape. Without the perceived need for especially heavy protection, it started out as a 15,000-ton design rather similar to USS Wasp, but various changes brought increased levels of protection, including belt and deck armour to protect machinery and magazines, as well as increasing the calibre of the anti-aircraft guns. However, the single largest influence on the design was the choice of how to manage the flight deck. Most aircraft carriers of this period had a symmetric flight deck, i.e. the flight deck extended an equal amount from either side of the centre line. But that meant that the area abreast the island would have to be narrower, because the island existed, compared to the areas of the flight deck fore or aft. Whereas on the new French design, the entire flight deck was offset about 20 feet to port. This provided a continuous width flight deck and neatly offset the weight imbalance of the island being on the starboard side without any additional deadweight ballast being needed. The slight downside to this was that since the flight deck now overhung the port side of the ship quite considerably, no anti-aircraft guns could be mounted on that side, and so the anti-aircraft battery was instead concentrated fore and aft of the island, in a layout rather similar to that which would later be seen with the 5-inch 38 batteries on the Essex class, or had been seen earlier with the 8-inch anti-surface batteries on the Lexingtons. There would be two hangars, a large upper hangar, which would house the operational flight group, and a smaller lower hangar in the aft end of the ship, which had its own elevator, which would be the maintenance and repair area, which was accompanied by a rather large storage area just ahead of it. With a primary mission of battle fleet support and a secondary mission of potential convoy protection, the air group was planned to be about 40 in total, 15 high-performance monoplane fighters and 25 mixed-role compact twin-engine strike aircraft, which in part accounted for the relatively small air group despite the 35,400-square-foot upper hangar, which was a slightly larger area than that found on a Yorktown. The final design displaced 18,000 tonnes and was capable of just over 33 knots thanks to 120,000 Cheval Vapeur delivered via two shafts. Armament consisted of four twin 130mm dual-purpose guns, a pair superfiring forward of the island and another pair aft, four twin 37mm mounts sat between the 130mm mounts and the island at each end, plus a scattering of anti-aircraft machine guns. Armour at the final count was 4.1 inches on the belt and up to 2.8 inches on the deck above the magazines. Two ships would be authorised in 1938, Joffre and Panlev, with Joffre laid down in November 1938. However, the ship was less than a quarter complete at the time of France's surrender in 1940, as priority had been given to battleship construction. While delays in fielding the proposed aircraft had led to orders of US fighters and dive bombers as an interim air group. But the Germans surprisingly showed no real interest in continuing work on the ship, and the hull was thus broken up in place instead.
That's it for this video. Thanks for watching. If you have a comment or suggestion for a ship to review, let us know in the comments below. Don't forget to comment on the pinned post for dry dock questions.